This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, former Portage City Manager Mike Stampfler, now a Libertarian candidate for State House. But first, for the last 4 years, Ruth Johnson has served as Michigan's Secretary of State. The Republican is seeking another four-year term in the November election. Ruth Johnson, thank you very much for being here.
It's great to be here, Gordon.
Let's just have you begin by telling us what you would like to do if you are reelected and get another 4 years as Michigan Secretary of State.
I'm running again because we've started so many projects and pilots that I'd like to follow through on, and they're all about customer convenience, making it simpler, easier, and faster to get whatever you need at DMV or motor vehicle portion. And then also for our elections, I want to make sure that we have integrity, but also make them more convenient. And then one of the other parts a lot of people don't know, we really are a fraud protection agency, too. We do a lot of consumer protection and things that we do in our office. And so I guess I'll first start with what we're doing for folks that need to get a driver's license or a driver's license tag or anything at one of our DMV offices. We have, and I'm sure a lot of people here at the university would like to use ExpressSOS.com. You can go online and pay for it with your charge card, and then simply print the receipt and carry it with you, and you're legal the moment you get that receipt. So let's say you need a driver's license tab. 96% of the people can go online, be able to print out the receipt for their tab, as long as they can show that they have insurance. And they will be able to carry their receipt with them, and the tab's coming in the mail. That includes on the fourth year on your driver's license. If you've lost a title or a registration, you can join the organ donor registry. You can renew your boat license. So many things with print-and-go technology on ExpressSOS.com. And that, of course, shortens our lines at our branch offices when people use that technology.
Is there an additional charge for using a credit card?
We pass on the charge of the credit card. The credit cards do have a small charge to them, and we pass those on because we don't think it's fair for people that use cash to have to pay for the people that paid credit cards. We have added on Visa, which is good. We never had Visa, which is more convenient for people, too. For our elections, we've tightened up what we do in our office as far as working with the legislature to get tougher laws. One of the things that we've done, again, it's too hard if you're a student to be able to look up in your community who's getting money from whom. And so we've tightened that up. If it's anything over $5,000, it used to be $20,000, people actually have to file online. They have to disclose when they have robocalls. And we have a new pilot that I'm very excited about, and that is your local officials will be able to use the state system so you don't have to drive to your town hall, whether it's a city or a township that you live in. You'll merely be able to go online to see what your supervisor, your trustees, your council members, all the money that they've collected and how they've spent it too, all electronically.
So local elected officials, city council, county board, those sort of things would also be available online.
Sure, school board members. So we have a pilot going right now. So that's a great part of disclosure, I think, is so important because we need to be able to find out. We all have busy lives, and especially if you're a student living in a university, it's too hard to drive back home to look at it. So we want to make sure that the convenience is there. Well, when you look at fraud, probably the biggest place that we found fraud after we looked into it was car insurance. It can be anywhere from whiteout to organized crime. And on one day across the state in July, July 31st, we did a statewide review of all paper insurance that came into our office. We found 16.1% were fraudulent or non-valid. So when we looked at how they were done, we found it anywhere from somebody using whiteout that didn't want to have to get new insurance and changing the date. But what we found, people selling insurance from their cars with laptops and printers, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. But we found it so organized that some insurance companies had help desks and QR codes. And when you looked up the QR code, they were arrogant enough, rather than talking about insurance, they have a picture of a llama and it says llamas are so cool. Well, selling fake insurance is not. We worked with law enforcement. We're able to get an auto dealership for used cars closed down that was selling cars with insurance. And the way people found out, of course, is their insurance was not valid. So when they had a claim, there was no money coming to them that they had paid for. So we've worked with state police prosecutors. We put together a task force called FAIR, Fighting Auto Insurance Ripoffs. We've already cut the fraud by more than half just by looking into it and changing some of the things that we do, the information we get, how quickly we get it to the law enforcement now. But there's still lots more to do, and we've sent that on to the legislature.
The last figure I saw is about 13% of people take advantage of online for re-registering their car or renewing a driver's license if they can at that time. Are there other things you think you can do to nudge people in that direction, which would then, of course, lead to shorter lines for the people who do have to go in for whatever reason?
Exactly. I mean, it's a threefer. You don't usually get that. It shortens the lines for people that have to go in. And it also is so much better for the people that use it. You can do it from your house, your dorm, wherever you're at, and you don't have to get out of your jammies and drive to the SOS office and stand in line. And then it also helps our staff, because when you fill out the fields, that's 50% of our workload, which is so helpful because we're down 25% staff from where we were a decade ago. So it's all good. So we are encouraging people as much as we can. The legislature didn't have extra money to help us advertise, so we've come up with many creative ways to do that. And one of them was I took a kayak in May. The icebergs were gone, just barely, but they were gone. Not on Lake Superior, but where I was at. And I kayaked from the island down to the mainland. It's a 7-mile kayak, and I put up a sail that I had made that says Express, SOS.com. And I need to get something that hangs off of it that says print and go, because the fact is some people think, oh, my birthday's in a week. I can't do this. It's too late. It's not. Simply print the receipt, put it in your wallet, and you're good to go. So somebody asked me if I was going to jump out of a plane. I won't do that, but we are coming up with more creative ideas on getting the word out. And doing a radio show like this is very helpful because, of course, your audience generally is very technologically savvy. The other thing is we found about 1 out of 5 people don't have computers, so we're working with the libraries across the state on Express SOS Connect, we call it, so people can go there. We're working with Meijer on 2 pilots, one on the east side, one on the west side of the state, where you can come in and get your tab, your fishing pole, your milk, your bread, all at once from a self-service station. And we just announced that we're working with AAA. They've put computers with printers right in their office, 2 of them, and they're going to do all 31. It's working so well already. They were going to wait longer, but it's just working so well for people. Convenience, faster, easier, better. Everyone's busy, whether you're a student or you're working or both. We need to make sure that we get people through the system as quickly as we can so that they have more time for themselves. We also put in My Timeline, which is in our 10 busiest branches. You actually can make your appointment, right, from your cell phone or from your home phone. And of course, if you have a cell phone, a smartphone will keep you updated how long it's going to take so that you can run errands, stay home, study, whatever you need to do.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans speaking with Ruth Johnson, Michigan's Secretary of State, who is seeking another 4-year term this November. You mentioned earlier some of the new rules on financial disclosure. You actually were trying to go a little further than that and put some more light on the so-called dark money. Kind of remind our voters what you had originally proposed.
Well, I'd like every single penny to be disclosed. I even disclosed my office holder's expense account, which is not required. And I wanted all the money, no matter what they're used for on commercials or any other way, to be disclosed. I didn't get everything I want, but we did get a lot done. And it's a continuous process finding ways that we can have more disclosure. And I'll continue to do that.
Are you open to the idea of, assuming you're reelected, of taking this up again and trying to get it through the legislature, seeing if you can get some more agreement there?
Well, there's a law that's been changed right now, and it's based on First Amendment rights where some people do not agree with me, and it would be a legislative change, so the legislature would have to take it up and change that. I feel like it should be done, but at this point, we did get a lot done, and I didn't get everything I want, but I'll never stop looking for more ways for transparency.
Let's talk a little bit about the way we vote in Michigan. Are there some ways that we could expand this? Other states have done some things with voting by mail, having multiple days for people to cast ballots, perhaps voting online. Are you open to any of that?
Well, on the voting online, I'll take that one up first. The answer is no. And I'll tell you why, because they did do a demonstration in Washington, D.C. with voting online, and another university, University of Michigan, they tried to see if they could hack in. And not only could they hack in and change the votes, but they played their fight song, too, on those machines. So we know we're not ready for electronic voting if you want integrity. So I would not support anything that takes away the integrity of our system. It's so important. One person, one vote. Doesn't matter if you're 18 or 98, your vote counts the same. And I think that's so important. The only way we can keep that true is to make sure we have integrity. Now, yes, with technology, I think we can look at other ways. When people talk about early voting, they have to remember that half our clerks in Michigan work out of their homes. And that's because we have home rule. We have 1,701 clerks. We have 38,000 poll workers, and we've done everything online for them so they can look at little clips to learn. So there's a consistency, again, using technology to better our system. Our state was named the sixth best in the nation for election administration, which is kudos to our clerks because they're the ones, our local clerks, that conduct the election and the 34 people that we have in the Bureau of Elections at the state to help guide them. So the county clerks do a great job, local clerks, and then our Bureau of Elections. I believe that we're at a point now, as we've cleaned up our qualified voter file, because there was 102.54% of our eligible electorate registered to vote in 2008. So we've gone about cleaning up our qualified voter file. We need a little bit more information to finish that up. And when we do, I certainly think that we should have no reason absentee, which would give everyone 45 days to vote ahead of time. But the votes would be all counted on election day, so it technically would not be called early voting. But what's better than not waiting in line and having 45 days to vote? And under Michigan's system of home rule, that would work perfectly.
So no reason absentee voting. You can get an absentee ballot without having to account for why. That's the big part of it, right?
That would need legislative change to do that. Right now, you have to be over 60 or expect to be out of town, serving in the military, disabled, awaiting arraignment. There's a number of different reasons why you can vote absentee, but we don't have in Michigan no reason absentee. Maybe I just want to study all day. Maybe I got a big test I wasn't prepared for in time. So I want to make sure, you know, maybe one of your kids or grandkids are involved in a concert or a soccer game, whatever it may be. We have such busy lifestyles that I think as we finish up cleaning up the qualified voter file, and we're waiting for the federal government for some more information to do that, I do believe that the legislature will look favorably on no reason absentee, which will give people 45 days to vote rather than 2 or 3 days or a week.
You mentioned cleaning up the qualified voter file. Are there safeguards in there? Because we've heard some problems in other states about, you know, names look the same and someone who should have been allowed to vote wasn't allowed to vote because there was a purge of the voter rolls that was not done very well.
We wear suspenders and a belt in Michigan. There's no one that will be turned away that's a qualified voter. I guarantee that. We do have a number of systems in place. One, for the first time, we have Virtual University Interactive for our 38,000 precinct workers, as well as our 1,701 clerks. We have 2 to 5 minute segments on YouTube so they can go ahead and look at whatever their particular question is rather than reading a 3-inch manual. They can go ahead and look and see how it works, have someone show them. It's done professionally. The clerks wrote the scripts for us so they knew what the issues were. We have a system in Michigan to make sure that anyone that's a qualified voter will be able to vote. There's just no doubt about that. And last election, I had one call. Somebody went into their local clerk's office and there was a communication gap. The clerk there that was working the desk thought that they were canceling their voter registration, but really what they wanted to do, and there was some communication error, they wanted to move it to a different city. So we got a phone call, we got checked everything out, it was so, and so we made sure that that person was allowed to vote. So we take every vote seriously because no one should ever be disenfranchised, and that's including people those of us that are qualified voters, if somebody is not and they vote, and we've had that happen too. We joined the Kansas Project. We found over 130,000 people that are registered in Michigan and another state. So we've brought that issue to Candace Miller, who is a congressman from Macomb County, who used to be Secretary of State. She's working on legislation. You should only be registered in one state and only vote in one state. That's important. We found many dead people that had voted, but it was clerical error. So we now have a 93% of our voting area, our voting precincts, the local clerks have taken on the responsibility to put electronic poll books in. So when you slide your license through or state ID, you don't mix up junior or senior or touch the little reader on the barcode in the wrong place and show somebody dead voted but not the person that actually did. So we've done many things to clean it up to make sure that it's done properly. Integrity, convenience, every vote counts.
Ruth Johnson, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon. It's great to be here.
Ruth Johnson is Michigan's Secretary of State. The Republican is seeking another 4-year term this November. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. For 20 years, Mike Stampfler was the city manager of Portage. Now he would like to represent that city and several surrounding townships in the State House. Stampfler is running as a Libertarian in the 61st State House District. Mike Stampfler, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
Let's have you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and what you would like to do if you are elected to the State House.
All right. Well, just some things about me. I'm born in Berry County. Lived on a dairy farm. My family ran a dairy farm in the days when there were dairy farms. And so a Michigan native, went to school at Hope College for an undergraduate degree, and then Western Michigan University for some master's work, and started out with the city of Kalamazoo in the manager's office. And so for 10 years, I worked for Kalamazoo in various capacities. Then at the city of Portage, as you said, for 20 years as city manager. And I have worked in several other states over the years as city manager. And also, I think notably, as the emergency manager of Pontiac, appointed by Governor Granholm. And so my idea is that I have a rather well-founded or well-rounded idea of what kinds of things government does well and what kinds of things government doesn't do too well, and a good understanding of the area and of the state and of other areas that are trying to do innovative kind of things. So I think that those in combination make me a good candidate to serve the people of the area in a really progressive and issue-oriented way.
So let's talk about some things. Libertarians are, of course, known for limited government. What are the things that you do think that government does well, or at least that it's necessary for government to perform?
I think issues around security and issues around the way society is structured and the laws that pertain to how society functions are most important issues for government to try to perform. When it gets into more of the social kinds of issues, I don't know that there's a motivation to always find the best answer. But I like to say a lot of times government does some satisficing, which is take the first good answer that comes around, but don't necessarily search for the best answer. And so there are a lot of things that government, I think, falls short in. And so I think that it takes a little bit more work.
You mentioned your experience as an emergency manager in Pontiac. Of course, the state's eyes are currently on Detroit somewhat to see how bankruptcy plays out. But I guess I'm wondering, we've seen a lot of cities fall into financial distress. What are some things that the state could do, and should they do them, to prevent them from getting there in the first place?
Yes, I think in this case, this is the issue where all the communities, all the cities in the state are children of, or subsets of, the state government. That's the way it's structured in the Constitution, most typically. And so when evidence mounts that a community has failed financially, the state, I believe, does need to intervene. The problem is that at the current construction, the way that it's viewed, the state really does little more than balance the financial books and get it ready for sort of, you might say, a do-over. That's not what these communities need. It may have been that way many, many, many years ago, but it isn't that way now. These cities need really an economic restructuring. And particularly my fear with Detroit is we absolutely, as Michiganders, want Detroit to succeed. Detroit must succeed because none of us are going to be whole unless Detroit is whole. But having said that it must succeed, I think the structure, the way that the state approaches it, it's not going to succeed. Because there isn't really an economic restructuring in Detroit. It's strictly going to be this financial balancing of the books. Then the emergency manager leaves. The Detroit council is still stuck with huge unemployment, huge number of vacant properties. They're not financially able even to take down the number of properties that are derelict and decrepit. So they really have so many strikes against them that it's going to be hard for them to come about economically, even after a do-over is given. So how that relates to the people of the 61st District in particular is that while the state spent $195 million already, I don't think we should expect that that's going to cure the problem in Detroit or address the issues that face Detroit. And so I think that people should be fair from the state and indicate that this is going to cost Michigan a lot of money, which I can understand if we're satisfying what the problems are.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Mike Stamfler. He is the Libertarian candidate in the 61st State House District, which includes the city of Portage. For many years, he was Portage's city manager. The role of government in education, state government specifically in education, if it was just up to you, what role would Michigan play in local school districts, K through 12 schools, et cetera?
I think there's a role for the state to help equalize in the economies, the economic scale between communities and what the equality corresponds in between communities. And I think there's a role for the Department of Education in terms of testing so that we have benchmarks about how different districts are doing, and there's an oversight role for the state of Michigan government and how school districts are performing. After that, though, I want to just say that the strongest education system will be that which is bolstered the most and cared for the most at the local level. And it's not necessarily that the ideas should come from one central place as much as the reflection of the community should shine through and allow the students in that area to perform the very best.
Higher education. Student debt is reaching all-time highs. And of course, at the state level, there are questions about how much money to put into state universities, community colleges, etc. If that was on your desk as a state lawmaker, what would you like to do?
Well, the state has, state lawmakers have taken money out to fund other issues that are before them. So assistance to universities is lessened. And therefore, you know, universities have raised prices that most students are having to pay, and they incur the debt. And the banking issue of this whole thing is perplexing. It is, you know, the investigations in our for-profit education systems have shown that there are a number of so-called universities that have really put the issue in front of many people looking at how can we loan these people so much money for a questionable degree at the end. So the state does have responsibility, but I think because the spending has gone in other areas at the state, they've taken it away from the key area of education, and so it's passed on to the consumer, the student. And it comes down to merely then a banking situation, which is very unfortunate and should not be the case if, again, the state legislators were watching more closely where the money is going.
So you think there should be more money in higher education?
I do.
Where would you like to get it from? Where do you think it has gone to that was misappropriated by the state?
Well, I think that there is this awfully difficult issue of other post-employment benefits that the state faces. I think that they haven't owned up to that quite yet, but over the years, money has gone to pay those kind of issues as opposed to things like education. And that is to say they've taken the low fruit and patched in certain places without addressing the overriding question about what are we going to do with these benefits, these high benefit retirement costs that are going to really come home to roost with the residents of the state. And so it's really been a shell game. And the latest to notice is the education, higher education. So The problem is that the state legislature for years has not been facing full up, full square, what the issues are.
Do you believe that the state should amend the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act and include protections against discrimination for sexual orientation and gender identity?
Yes.
Why do you believe that?
Because I think that it's an issue of fairness, and I think that people's work productivity and that sort of thing are not affected by those kind of issues. I think that we know that it's just a better society and a better system when we can encompass everyone and bring everyone to the table to do the work that we need. We need all the creativity and all the inclusiveness that we can get.
Do you believe marijuana should be decriminalized or legalized in Michigan?
Yes.
Why do you believe that?
Why? Because I think there's a disproportionate number of people, for one thing, who are criminalized and marked for life. And society has spent so many dollars on trying to wrestle with people that's not a material effect on what their output can be in society. And if we look at this about the certain people that are in this largely racial issue, in my mind, so many people are imprisoned, and society must spend money on people who would not hurt society in any way, shape, or form. Criminals are a different situation, but the way that the prison housing goes and the cost of imprisoning people, incarcerating people, really says we've got a little problem here about who are we really going after? Where are our police forces and law enforcement agents spending their time? What should they or could they better be doing? And when we get to the prison, how could we spend money more effectively to help people who have a need as opposed to marking people and spending our money that way?
At the state legislative level, it's so far all Republicans and Democrats who currently occupy the seats in Michigan's legislature, both the House and the Senate. Can a Libertarian win a race for state House?
I don't know. We have to see whether a Libertarian can win. But I think the question would be, in my mind, can a Libertarian help join two sides, or at least can a Libertarian ask questions that should be asked that are not now being asked? And would the citizens of 61st District and state of Michigan and larger issue be assisted by those questions being asked and answers being demanded? And I really think that's the job of a legislator. And I think that the typical party system, for a lot of different reasons that we see in our state, has not worked that way and is showing fewer signs of working that way. You know, legislature's in session about 80 days a year. 1,700 bills were considered last year. The question is, well, what has that legislation considered done for Michigan? We still have these very, very poor statistics for our condition of our children, for our unemployment rate, for Detroit and other communities. And I think that list is going to grow. And so, you know, I think we just need a shot in the arm. And I think the Libertarian might be the one that would help.
Do you think the issues you raise in the course of a campaign and the questions you ask are as important as the number of votes you actually get November 4th?
Well, you know, I think a lot of Libertarians in the past have taken great solace in, you know, well, I got X number of votes. I don't think that's, you know, I mean, that's not what I'm trying to do. So I would like to win. So,
Mike Stampfler, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Gordon.
Mike Stampfler is the Libertarian candidate for State House in the 61st District, which includes the city of Portage. He is the former city manager of Portage. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.